Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast, the podcast where we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope that it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors of sexual abuse too. We hope that you find it interesting, but more than that, if you are a survivor of sexual abuse, we hope that you find our discussion empowering. Hello, podcast listeners. My name is Alan Collins. I'm the partner who heads up the abuse team at Hugh James. And I'm joined by my colleague, Danielle Vincent. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, Alan.
And this week, our podcast is about abuse in education. Abuse in education is something that sadly appears in the media frequently. It never ceases to amaze me the number of cases that come to light about schools, teachers abusing, tragically and sadly, pupils. So we're going to talk about it today. It is an unpleasant subject, but it's important nevertheless for us to discuss it. So I think it was your idea, Danielle, for us to talk about this in this podcast. So what made you decide that it would be suitable for a podcast? So over to you.
Well, there's two reasons. First of all, there was the headline that a teacher from Eton had been suspended from school. That came about in November 2020. So we've been following that case, and now that person has now been charged and sentenced. So anyone will know Eton School, as you know, that's a high prestigious private school. So it was quite surprising to see a headline like that come out of there, especially when we know some of the former pupils are, you know, household names.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, we were both discussing it. And then, you know, when we do this research for our podcast, there's so many other private schools that have come up. If you do research on the internet, so many private schools. I mean, it's not just private schools, there's comprehensive schools as well. But I mean, because it hit the headlines, that was one of the things I thought, you know, we should have a chat about.
Indeed. And ICSA, the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse, towards the end of last year, looked at schools. And a particular case that I was concerned with was a primary school in the west of England, where a primary school teacher wreaked havoc, basically, through abusing pupils. The parents trusted this particular teacher. The pupils looked up to this teacher, and yet he was abusing in plain sight, in plain daylight. And all the various sort of safeguarding mechanisms that should have kicked in didn't work. And it was basically because this individual, this abusive teacher, was able to pull the wool over people's eyes. But having said that, his behaviour was sort of blatant, and sort of complaints were made, and there were warnings and so on, but none of it sort of got picked up on. And tragic for all the pupils, their parents and the staff at the school. It causes just so much damage. That was a primary school. So it's not just, you know, prestigious private schools, public schools. You know, abuse of pupils can happen in any school. And that is a reality, an unfortunate reality. But anyway, back to you.
Yeah, so as you say, it's not just, you know, not even mainstream schools. We've got in there faith schools, all different types of education facilities, really. There is an opportunity. I mean, this podcast, we were looking at really boarding schools, because the opportunity, it seems, especially in respect of the Eton teacher, came because he had access to go to the children's bedrooms at night, you know, after school. And these individuals, they obviously are placed in such a position of trust, because parents send their child to a boarding school in this case, you know, and expect them to be looked after, that safeguarding is there. So that effectively these teachers become secondary parents, you know, once the school day is over. And so there's the ability there to form close relationships with these pupils. And that is, you know, as we know, how sometimes these relationships occur, is that, well, it's not a relationship, but, you know, this abuse of trust is because, you know, these pupils are spending lots of time with these older individuals who sometimes proceed to groom.
That's right. It's a betrayal of trust at every level. But there's common features with all of these cases is the fact that the abuser, the abusive teacher, is able to strike up, want of a better term, a relationship. It's not the right word, is it? But we understand what I hope what we're talking about. They strike up that connection, that relationship, or some kind of bond between them and the victim. And quite often, the victims are, we find, are vulnerable. There's a vulnerability. You know, it may be that they're away from home, they're missing mum and dad and their family, they're a bit homesick in a boarding school setting. You also have situations where perhaps there is trouble at home, and maybe there's a vulnerability there. Sometimes there's a sort of learning disability of some sort, which makes them vulnerable. And very often, you know, we hear time and time again, the abusive teacher was the first person in my life, quote unquote, who showed interest in me.
Especially with the Eton case, is that it only came to light because another boy informed their mother. And I mean, there's an element that, especially if children go young, you know, we see it all the time in our cases. Someone doesn't know that they're being abused sometimes to many, many years later, you know, and certain behaviours may not seem wrong to a child or wrong to a teenager. It's only in later life that we know that those types of actions are very, very inappropriate.
Well, that's right. Having said that, there are quite prominent people in the media, just, well, I don't want to overplay it, you know, there's just a couple of people who've sort of remarked over the years that they were at boarding school and they were, as we would say, sexually abused, but they don't see it as sexual abuse. Maybe that's the way that they cope. Maybe that is how, in their mind, they rationalise what's happened. But for me, as looking in from the outside objectively, it begs the question, how much damage has that person possibly suffered as a result of what happened to them? They would obviously disagree and say that they haven't been damaged, and that's why they say what they say. It gives a twist on the insight into what takes place, and for me it just sort of demonstrates the power of what happens on the part of the abusive teacher when they are able to do these things to children and young people.
Yeah, and I think by us talking about it, I mean, the focus of this is that safeguarding's got to change. So whether it be a private school where, you know, the whoever is in charge of that particular school, you know, the governors, they have to make sure that their pupils are safe, that their teachers are validly checked, all the safeguarding is in place. And again, with local authorities, with comprehensive schools, that valid checks are being done, safeguarding, and, you know, if there are any concerns, that they are investigated properly.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what ICSA has to say in its report about all of this, because the case studies it was looking at the back end of last year demonstrated, in my opinion, and it is only my opinion, that you can have all sorts of safeguarding measures and procedures, but they're not really worth the paper they're written on unless they work. And for me, what was apparent was training for staff may not be as effective as it ought to be. And it sort of smacked off the need for there to be mandatory reporting, so that it doesn't matter who you are in a school, whether you're the head teacher or whether you're form teacher or whether you're an assistant or whether you're the school cook or whatever your role is in the school, if there is something that isn't right and you think a child is being abused or you're at risk of being abused, you should report it. And it isn't a matter of just sort of reporting it to another member of staff. It's actually reporting it to an outside body, whether it's the police or social services. You know, it's your responsibility. If you see something that's not right and you think a child is being abused or at risk of being abused, it's the onus is on you to do something about it, not devolve it onto somebody else and let them have the responsibility. I've seen cases where, you know, it is someone right at the bottom end of the hierarchy, so to speak, in schools who have actually reported the abuse. You know, the more senior members of staff have turned a blind eye or just don't want to see what's apparent. And it's been, you know, someone right at the bottom end of the hierarchy who has had the initiative to pick up the phone and contact the police. And that's how the perpetrators have been court. And for me, that demonstrates why you have to have mandatory reporting, because if in those cases, real cases, cleaners, school cleaners, they're the ones who saw what was going on. If they had just left it with the head teacher, the police wouldn't have been involved. You know, the cleaners, you know, were savvy enough in these various cases to think, no, I'm going to call the police. And that's how the perpetrators were caught. And I think those are striking examples of why mandatory reporting probably wouldn't be very effective if responsibility just falls onto the shoulders of one person in an organisation.
We've seen that in other organisations like the church, haven't we? It's if there's mandatory reporting, it's dealt with by only particular people. Sometimes, you know, things fall through the gaps or get covered up.
And it's important, you know, but we don't lose sight of the fact that survivors and victims do have legal rights, and often they are not told that they can take action as a result of what happened to them as children. And you and I have dealt with many hundreds of successful cases brought by victims and survivors against those organisations that employed the abusers. And it's very important, I think, for that to happen. And again, I can think of a particular case where I acted for a client who happened to be a school teacher himself. He had been abused as a youngster at school, and he had messed up his adult life in many ways. He'd been able to get through education and become a teacher. So, you know, he had strength of character to persevere, but he'd been left with many personal problems. As a result of a criminal case, seeing the abusive headmaster, as it was, going to prison and bringing a successful civil case, which we did for him, against the employer of the headmaster, he achieved what he wanted to achieve, and case was finished and so on. And then many, many months later, I had a letter from him. I thought, oh, you know, open the post, there's this letter. I thought, oh, you know, my immediate thought was, you know, perhaps something had gone wrong. There was something not right. But he had written very kindly to me to say, thank you for reuniting me with my family.
Yeah.
And that was extremely touching. And what he was explaining there was, as a result of the civil case, he was able to get the specialist treatment that he needed that helped to address the problems in his personal life. And as a result of that, as he saw it, he could now have a fulfilling relationship with his family. This case wasn't about getting some compensation. For him, it was about being reunited with members of his family that the sexual abuse had, you know, put asunder, so to speak. And often think of him and the fact that he wrote to me and explained all of that, because it demonstrates for me why it is worthwhile so often for survivors to make full use of their legal rights.
I think as well, while we're discussing teachers, one of the important things to talk about actually is the difference between when an abuser, I think, is male and female sometimes. So, you know, if we look in the media and different things, when we've seen the example of the teacher that had a relationship with his female pupil and they tried to go to France, you know, that hit the headlines very big. You know, it was a story that everybody saw and knew of. But then we have many, many cases where a female teacher will have a relationship with a 16 or 17 year old boy or even younger. And to some extent, it's seen in a different light. You know, I discussed with you recently, I watched The Teacher, which came out on BBC, which is set in America, but it was a very different play out. You know, this boy is almost seen as, you know, a real stud, I guess is the word in America, that, you know, he had this relationship, and then actually, you know, it takes him a number of years to realize that he was abused. And then there's a huge impact on his education, his further relationship, his relationship with his family, you know. And I think it's really important when we talk about these podcasts to realize sometimes the focus is on a particular gender, but it's not. You can be abused by female or male. And I just think that's just something we should touch upon as well.
Exactly. And it was made loud and clear in the ICSA hearing last year that abusive teachers do not come with a sign around their necks saying abusive teacher. You know, they're there in plain sight, they're not disguised, but you just wouldn't know.
You know, any level of teacher or, you know, employee, any age, you know, from any background, any sex. So, yeah, you know, they just don't come with a sign. So,
well, another interesting podcast, if I may say so, touching upon numerous aspects and features. So thank you very much for listening. If you are concerned about any of the matters that we've discussed, then please don't hesitate to get in touch. If you have any thoughts or comments, again, please do contact us. And please tune in next time to our next podcast. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favourite podcast player. If you'd like to speak to us about something you've heard today, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.